It is mock draft season. We are back with another fantastic Dynasty expert to walk you through the key names that you need to know ahead of those rookie drafts in May. And it's important to be understanding who are the risers, who are the fallers, and who you need to be concentrating ahead of those rookie drafts. Hello and welcome to the Fantasy Sanctuary. That is right, we are back with another rookie mock draft. I have got another fantastic guest joining me to walk us through a two-round mock. I'm joined by John Bauer. You may know him at the Bauer Club. He is the host of the fantastic Dynasty Theory. John, how are you doing?
Hey, Rich, what's going on? Thanks for having me on. As you were doing your intro, I was trying to adjust my setup here. I can never get it into a way that I like. And then, you know, but I think we're in a good spot right now and I'm excited to get through some of these rookies.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. If you find as we go through this, you know, rookie season for me, I'm not a big college football fan. We struggle to get stuff over here. So I sort of go through a phase of discovering players through sort of January, February into March. And I'm now at a point where I've pretty much watched everyone I want to watch. I've pretty much written up my profiles and everyone I want to do. And now it's kind of just waiting for essentially the draft in sort of 4 or 5 weeks time. Are you at that point or are you still in that, I guess, discovery phase?
No, I feel pretty comfortable right now. You know, a lot of my research, it's more data driven. So as the college season progresses, I'm able to go through, put the final touches, finishing touches on the data. And, you know, there are certain things for every position group that I'm looking for. And at this point in time, you know, looking at some of the NFL mock data that's out there, and just overall, you know, thoughts on the class. I think at this point we have a pretty good idea of the names that really need to be looked at. You know, we've done all of our studying, and of course we're going to have some curveballs whenever the draft gets here. You know, a couple years ago, nobody expected Clyde Edwards-Helaire to go in the first round. You know, there are surprises every year. Maybe somebody slips a little bit further than we initially thought, or there's a name that pops up, Velus Jones in Chicago, whenever he got drafted, obviously didn't ultimately end up being fantasy relevant, but there's always these names that come up that, you know, might force us to take another look at that player. But at this point in time, Rich, I'm there. I feel comfortable. But again, in a month, we'll see what that level of comfort looks like for me. It's probably going to be a little bit different, but we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's always, you know, the flip side of there's guys that fall every year. I can remember my first season really getting into Dynasty. Hakeem Butler was expected to be a top three wide receiver pick and expecting to be a bit of a superstar. And he ended up falling. I think he went to the first pick in the fourth round to the Arizona Cardinals.
Pre-NFL draft. Hakeem Butler, Calvin Harmon, those guys were, you know, if you were in a rookie draft, pre-NFL draft or a startup pre-NFL draft, it was disastrous.
Yeah. Yeah. They certainly fell a long way very quickly. We're going to dive in. As we said, we're going to do a 2-round super flex tight end premium mock draft. So we're looking at a 0.5 premium here, John. I gave you the pick of whether you went 101, 102. You have picked the 101. Do you think it feels like we've fallen into consensus? Do you feel like that's going to be the way it is come May? Do you think anything could change potentially that consensus 101 pick?
You know, I think a lot of it, and this is kind of a buzzword around this time of year, but prospect fatigue. I think a lot of people, they've been hearing about Caleb Williams for how long now, that he's one of those prospects that people want to nitpick. Whether it's on the field, off the field, the way he carries himself in these interviews and, you know, this process along the way leading up to the NFL draft. But for me, The only way it is not Caleb Williams at 101 in super flex rookie drafts is if you have some super unique settings that drives the value maybe of a tight end. So Brock Bowers, you know, there's people that play in leagues. You have to start two and you're getting an extra point per reception. You know, like there are crazy settings out there that might make you adjust a little bit. But for the most part, I would say, unless Caleb Williams, for some reason, plummets down the actual NFL draft board and he goes like 10th overall, and it's like, okay, what is going on here? That's the only way. And I think that's kind of a crazy hypothetical situation, and we're probably not going to see that come to fruition. So for me, it's Caleb Williams 101. I think what the Chicago Bears have done up to this point in the offseason, they've shown that, okay, we had a situation with Justin Fields. We didn't necessarily put all of the weapons around him that would have allowed him to, you know, be in a better situation. Let's get it right this time around with Caleb Williams. And as a coaching staff, as a regime, they need to win. So you have DJ Moore, you bring in Keenan Allen, you have Cole Kmet, you bring in DeAndre Swift, you have the pick at 9 that I think they ultimately spend on a wide receiver. It's probably going to be, you know, Rome Odunze is certainly going to be on the board there, probably. But they're putting the weapons around him in the presumed 101 there being Caleb Williams. So, yeah, I have him as a top 10 dynasty quarterback off the bat. I know a lot of people, they want to try to pick apart his game. I think he's going to excel at the NFL.
Yeah, I think he's a phenomenal prospect. And as you said, like, I can't think of a quarterback that's come into, certainly a 101 pick that's come into a better landing spot when you think of Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, potentially another wide receiver, obviously Cole Kmet. They've added Gerald Everett in the wide receiver room, and then the running back room of Khalil Herbert, Roshan Johnson. Oh, let's just throw in DeAndre Swift. And the offensive line, I think, still needs some work, but it's getting there. I think it's at least a competent NFL offensive line. And yeah, look, I'm not the biggest fan of the play caller, but when you've got a defensive head coach, I think the play caller is always going to be slightly questionable. So yeah, amazing situation. I agree with you. I think we can nitpick and pull things apart, but he's going to be, you know, I think a very reliable fantasy option. And I think that he's going to push the ball downfield and create out of structure, which is going to be fantastic for scoring fantasy points, quite frankly.
Yeah, and it's not like he came from a situation at USC where they had this tremendous offensive line and he had to play within structure. He's able to, but it's not required. You know, I wouldn't say he's a rushing quarterback, but he's certainly mobile enough to alleviate some of the pressure that maybe at times a subpar offensive line is going to put you in kind of that questionable situation. But you asked me before the show, hey, you're the guest. Do you want to be 101 or 102 in this rookie draft? And for me, you know, even up until recently, looking at it, I had the 101 and 102 tiered together, but there is that separation for me, and I can't see a situation where I'm the 101 in a super flex rookie draft and I go anything other than Caleb Williams. So that if I had them tiered together, I might've had a little bit more fun with it and said, oh, you take the one, I'll take the two. But no, I was walking out of this mock with Caleb Williams one way or another, Rich.
Yeah, no, I agree with that thought process. Cause I was very similar. I started my film evaluation back in January, and after watching 3 games of each, I had Drake May ahead of Caleb Williams, and I was a Drake May guy. But I think it's the more I've dove in, the more games I've watched, Caleb Williams has separated himself, and I think for me he's that now clear 101, and I think to me that 102 and 103 are in a bucket, and I think that's sort of the next tier. For me, I'm going to come up here at the 102. I'm going to go and grab Marvin Harrison. I think that, look, when you can get a potential top 5 dynasty wide receiver in a rookie draft, I think that's an absolute smash pick. I think that he does everything I could ever dream of and want of from a prospect. He's the highest film grade I've given to a wide receiver in the last 9 years I've been grading rookie wide receivers coming out of college. So I've got so few concerns. I think he's a phenomenal route runner. I think what he does at the catch is fantastic. And he's got really impressive body control for a guy his size. So yeah, absolutely delighted to grab him here at the 102. Just a reminder, guys, if you are watching, we are live. Feel free to get your comments in. Feel free to get your questions in. We can pick John's brain as we draft. And you're up now, John, with the 103.
I'm going to stick with the quarterbacks here. I just think, you know, outside of Caleb Williams being the prospect that he is, Jaden Daniels offers the most upside. And again, it's not a knock on Drake May. It's not a knock on JJ McCarthy, but it really speaks to the type of prospect that Jaden Daniels is. He improved throughout his collegiate career. Yes, he had two, most likely, you know, I think Brian Thomas is going to get in there, the top 20 in the NFL draft. He, Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas at his disposal here at LSU, but he gives you the upside. He gives you the rushing ability. The only thing, and this is a completely fair knock that you hear about him, he needs to learn how to slide or avoid contact. He does not have the frame that he can continue to get body slammed time and time again. He doesn't have the Anthony Richardson type frame, but if he's able to stay healthy, and he didn't miss really any time in college, he was taking hits, but he's tough, you know? So I'm going to go Jaden Daniels. He's the one outside of Caleb Williams. I think, you know, we look at the other three quarterbacks, Daniels, May, and JJ McCarthy. I think he's the one that I would be okay in any situation because he does give you that rushing upside. And we see it even until, you know, we saw it until Justin Fields was traded, the value insulation that you get with these rushing quarterbacks, you know, because of the high floor they give you on a weekly basis. So as long as they're on the field, they're going to produce for fantasy purposes. At 103, Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, I laughed when you were describing his need to be able to slide and avoid contact, because we put out a video a few weeks ago of, there's a highlight reel of him just no self-preservation, just taking complete body shots unnecessarily. It's the kind of thing I think you can get away with a little bit in college. He does that in NFL with NFL safeties and linebackers. I think he's going to have a very short career. I get all the upside with Jaden Daniels. I'm a little bit lower than I think consensus because I'm concerned about his ability to operate from the pocket. I think, you know, we've got a fairly high pressure to sack rate. I think he doesn't manipulate the pocket well. I think he's a 1-2 to scramble type passer rather than a 1-2-3. And I think sometimes in the NFL that can be schemed out. Is there a scenario you talked up that rushing kind of upside and how that potentially gives you the floor? Do you feel like Jaden Daniels is a bit more boom bust than a player like Drake May? Or do you feel that the rushing floor of Jaden Daniels for fantasy gives him that kind of safety net that will allow him to get on the field and continue to produce?
I think it does give him the safety net. In terms of a boom bust, I think just the fact that he might be the one, you talk about longevity and him staying healthy and him having a longer career, that's where the bust potential comes in. I don't think it's going to be a matter of, can he play at this level? But on a weekly basis, I don't think there's much bust potential. But on a 2-3 year outlook, you could certainly make the case that Drake May will be safer in terms of the longer term bust potential. And then certainly JJ McCarthy too. You could throw him in there. It sounds like there's a lot of steam and a lot of smoke around JJ McCarthy going top four in the NFL draft at this point. And then the Chargers look at their pick. You know, what are they? Are they number five? Where they might very well have the first non-quarterback pick of the draft, which is crazy to think about. But I cannot wait for this NFL draft.
Yeah, I would say I feel like we have this conversation every year where it's our quarterbacks could go 1, 2, 3, 4, and they never do. Like it never happens. I think I've seen 1, 2, 3. I've never seen 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm happy to be proved wrong on that, but
no, I think you're right. And again, it is smokescreen season. Like how much psychological warfare is going on right now across the NFL and with these GMs? You know, they're out there playing chess, trying to put their teams in the best situation. And one way to do that would be to make people reach on players that you're talking up and you're like, I have no intention of even being remotely interested in them. So you know, is this the year that it goes 1, 2, 3, 4? We'll find out.
Maybe. But I wanted to pick on something you mentioned there about Jaden Daniels, because I think it's something that kind of gets misconstrued with quarterbacks in fantasy particularly. And we had this last year with Anthony Richardson. I think with Jaden Daniels, because of the rushing production he's going to have, he has a much higher floor than probably any other quarterback in this draft for fantasy, because he is going to be a startable fantasy quarterback in your Superflex leagues from the second he gets into the NFL because of that rushing ability. Now, if you were to say to me, who's more likely to be a starting NFL quarterback in 4 years' time, I would have Jaden Daniels behind Drake May. I would have him behind certainly Caleb Williams and potentially behind JJ McCarthy, because I think he's got a bigger bust potential as an NFL quarterback. But for fantasy purposes, he's got probably the highest floor, and you could argue the highest ceiling for fantasy of any of these top four quarterbacks in the draft. It's just a case of, I think that shelf life could potentially be shorter than the other quarterbacks. And I think that that's so often misconstrued when people talk about fantasy and particularly in dynasty circles around, oh, he's boom bust. He's got a high floor, a low floor, high ceiling. He doesn't have a low floor for fantasy because of that rushing production.
Yep. No argument for me.
And I'm going to follow it up. We've talked about him enough, so we don't need to hammer it home. I'm taking Drake May. He is my QB2. I think that the rushing production is completely undervalued. I think, you know, he's on a par with Caleb Williams. I think Drake May is probably more of a scrambler than a kind of designed run threat, but I think he is competent with the ball in his hands rushing. And I think that the one concern I've got is that footwork, and I expect that to be hammered out and cleaned up certainly as we get to the NFL draft. You're now up with the 105. Before we get there though, people, if you've got 18 minutes into this video and you've not hit subscribe button, you're doing yourself a disservice. Click that little button below and there'll be more content coming your way. Now, JB, you're up with the 105. Where are we going here?
I have a relatively large tier here. And when I say large, it's four guys. Well, with the 1.5 PPR for tight ends, Brock a little bit lower here now, as opposed to maybe a league where you get a full extra point. But I try to avoid this when doing shows like this or answering questions in our Discord or Patreon or whatever. But I'm going to give a cop-out answer here for this one, so I apologize. I have these two tiered together, and I've had them tiered together since January, really since I was getting the initial information all together. And if I have this pick across 20 leagues, I might be split 10 and 10 just to have some diversity among the portfolio when looking at this. But for the sake of this conversation, just because he's the talk of the town on Twitter today, give me Rome Odunze. I think the top three receivers here are going to be absolute studs. If you want to take Malik Nabers over Odunze, again, I'm probably going to be split 50-50 on the two. Maybe landing spot is going to dictate who I would kind of push a little bit ahead of the other. But Marvin, Malik, Rome, at this point in time, as crazy as it sounds, all three of them are top 10 dynasty receivers for me. And that speaks to the strength of this class. It speaks to the extremely high-end depth that is available. And he checks every box along the way for me. I know there's some nitpicking again with, well, it took him a few years to really get it together. You look at his yards per route run early in his collegiate career. It wasn't what you would hope for. And then another talking point is his contested target rate a little bit higher this season, around 20%. I just talked about this on yesterday's episode of Dynasty Theory. You know, yeah, he was at 20% in his final season for contested target rate. Jamar Chase was around 25% his final season. And the comp that I had back in January, and you kind of keep it a little quiet because you don't want people to think you're too crazy, even though anybody that knows me knows I'm a little bit crazy at least. But I said Rome Odunze is a slightly taller Jamar Chase. And then I start seeing these other takes, and I was like, okay, I can come out of the woodwork and not be so ashamed of potentially such an outlandish take because, oh, you know, that's clickbait. You know, you try to avoid that as much as possible. But, talking about the contested targets, his contested catch rate this year was almost 75%. So 50-50 balls with Rome Odunze are not 50-50. He's going to come down with that ball more often than not. But again, Rome Odunze 105 for me. I could talk about these guys all day, but we're 21 minutes in here and you can't get me to shut up, Rich. So
I absolutely love it. I think the thing that often gets forgotten with anyone quoting kind of contested catch numbers is that it is a relatively small sample size. Like, you know, we're not talking huge amounts of targets, huge amounts of kind of opportunity. Look, Rome Odunze's had 4 years in college and he's had 29 contested catch opportunities. That's not massive. So right, one or two catches either way can massively skew the numbers. But you then go to the film and say, is he, you know, winning unnaturally? And I think he's not. You know, he's a guy that, like Jamar Chase, doesn't get 3-4 yards open when running routes, but he gets open late. And it doesn't matter whether you get open late, whether you get open early, as long as you're able to get open and be able to secure the ball. And that's what he does. He does have, you know, that natural kind of hit mobility and natural ways to just slightly separate from the corner at the last step. So yeah, I'm a big Odunze fan. I do have him as my wide receiver 3. I've got Neighbors ahead. I think just slightly, you know, going back to the analytics, going back to my model, I think those first couple of years where Odunze didn't produce, and yes, Washington didn't play many games in his first year because of COVID and all that kind of
thing. I was just going to say, I don't have a red flag like Dan does on Dynasty Theory, but I'm throwing the flag there, Rich, but you kind of said it. The COVID year, it's questionable in terms of really putting together all this data. 2021, the name is slipping me, but his quarterback was horrendous. You know, and that is going to play a role. But yeah, I mean, there were some current concerns early on from an analytical perspective, but he put it together. And you're lucky I don't have a red flag. You just got the white paper towel thrown at you.
I'll take that. And look, I've got a type when it comes to wide receivers, smaller bodied, smooth, good route runners. That's the way I'm always going to lean. So I'm going to go Neighbors over Odunze. I think that just that explosive ability and what he can potentially do with the ball in his hands, as well as his route running ability, I think he could be electric. And I think he's going to be so much fun to watch, quite frankly, this year. So yeah, I'm very happy to take him here with the 106. But you're back up now with the 107.
Again, the 1.5 PPR for tight ends throw me off a little bit. And because of that, I'm going to go quarterback. I'm going to go with the last one that we feel pretty good getting the draft capital that just really pops off for folks. But J.J. McCarthy, you know, I'm not a huge J.J. McCarthy fan, but the expected draft capital here, again, doing this mock before the NFL draft, he had big play moments. He wasn't always asked to go out there and light the world on fire by any means, but I think he does enough things well. And when asked of him, he was able to come through. I saw the highlight, and I use air quotes there, the highlight video somebody put out on Twitter where it was like a montage of bad plays by JJ McCarthy. And it's like, I mean, you could do this for anybody. And I know some of it's just kind of in fun, but at 107, I'll take JJ McCarthy. I think the draft capital is really going to push him up here, and you know, he's going to get every opportunity given that draft capital to perform.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's be honest. You're getting a quarterback that, if he's going to go, let's be generous and say top 10, is going to have at least 3 years as a starting quarterback. If something goes horrendously wrong, maybe it's two, but realistically, it's 3 years as a starting quarterback. For fantasy circles, how many quarterbacks can you honestly say have got 3 years guaranteed as a starter? There's probably, what, 14, 15, maybe? But you're struggling there. And I think that if you're able to get a quarterback that you can comfortably say, that's going to be a guy I can, you know, maybe not plug and play, but is going to be in and around my lineup for the next 3 years, that has incredible value. And you're getting him as the seventh pick off the board. I think you know, you've got to be happy with that pick here.
I'm going through my tiers here. I think it's 14 quarterbacks that I would say have a better chance than not of being a starter 3 years from now. I'm not saying all of them are going to, you know, be turned over here or be relegated to the bench or retire, but you could really make a case against a lot of them. So I think 14 is fair.
And of those 14, let's take QB 14. Where are you taking him in a startup? What, probably third round, maybe fourth round?
Beginning of the third, I think.
Yeah. Which, you know, if you're getting JJ McCarthy, who's potentially a quarterback for 3 years
at the 107 at this
point in a rookie draft, I think is great value. And yeah, you know, quarterbacks are obscenely valuable in Superflex. And if he hits, he's an absolute smash. And even if he busts, you've potentially still got some quarterback value for the next couple of years. So yeah,
Here's the thing too. Even if you don't like these players going in this range, especially like a player like JJ McCarthy, and I certainly get it, but the perceived value of these picks is going to be rising. So if you're not a fan of these prospects, you should be excited that you have the pick at your disposal, because you can move off of it at a higher price than if McCarthy doesn't go top five or top 10. If maybe Bo Nix doesn't, you know, I see people still mocking him in the first round of the NFL draft. You know, you should be hoping that these guys get the draft capital or maybe a nice landing spot that's going to elevate the overall value. I'm looking at the comment there from Paul Neighbors at 106. Is incredible. It really is. Like I was ready to bash my computer here, even though I knew it's my fault. I'm the only other one in this mock that by going with Roma Dunze, Neighbors would be there at 106. But I think in a lot of mocks, you're going to get a Dunze at 106 or maybe even 107. I said there could be a case that, depending on your league dynamic and the way quarterbacks are valued and the tight end premium, and especially the landing spot for Brock Bowers, you might see Roma Dunze slip to 108 or 109. Maybe not now with all the positives coming out on Twitter with the reception perception and all that good stuff. Maybe that ship has sailed, but just the top 8-9 picks of this draft, they are tremendous.
Yeah. I say it every year. It feels like quarterbacks create depth in Superflex leagues. And any rookie draft, you know, you go back to the Kenny Pickett draft where it felt like a bad draft because there was no quarterbacks to draft in the first round. And suddenly, if we're going to have four quarterbacks go in the top 10, you know, if we get a Bo Nix or a Michael Penix go in those teens in the NFL draft, I can tell you now, they're probably going to end up being the top 10 pick in dynasty circles. And that's going to create some of these wide receivers to fall into the back end of the first, early second, and it's going to be phenomenal value. You know, if you're a coming off a title and you've got the 112 and you're suddenly getting wide receiver 4 or 5 fall to you at the 112. That's, you know, incredibly lucky.
We're going to have first round NFL wide receivers going 201, 202, 203 in super flex rookie drafts. And that really is, it just speaks to the quality of this class.
Yeah, absolutely. And if, you know, even if you add in a running back that gets a good landing spot and maybe round two draft capital, they're going to climb as well. So that's going to force someone else to fall, isn't it? But I'm up at the 108. I feel a little bit of a fraud, if I'm being brutally honest. I'm the person that says tight end value is overvalued at the moment. I'm the person that says that, you know, the difference making tight ends of the last 5 years in Travis Kelce, he was giving you 8 points per game more. Well, Sam LaPorta and Trey McBride are being valued as if they're Travis Kelce, but they're only giving you 4 points per game last year. And then I'm going to go and draft a rookie tight end. So, yeah, I'm taking Brock Bowers at the 108. I think, look, at me, this is kind of the end of a tier. I think that he is an incredible prospect. I've got so little concerns. Like, I'm a Georgia fan. I thoroughly enjoy watching Brock Bowers. What he does with the ball in his hand is not like pretty much any other tight end I've ever seen. And I've got very few concerns. And I think that if he falls outside the top 10 in the NFL draft, somebody is getting an absolute steal, because he's going to walk into the NFL as a difference-making slot receiver that can also line up in line and block. So, yeah, I think at this point, given it's that 0.5 premium, I think he's a great value and certainly happy to smash the pick here.
Yeah, like I said, if it was 2 PPR for tight ends, I had him in the 104 to 107 tier. You know, depending on roster construction, league dynamic, the way your league mates value certain positions, there is a case to be made in those high premium leagues that, you know, 104, 105. So 108, if you didn't take him there, I was taking him with the next pick.
So you teed up the 109. So who are you going to take with 109?
I'm going to take Xavier Worthy here. You know, I know there's a lot of comparison strictly because he is fast. Well, you know, it's a John Ross situation. Well, maybe it's like a Jalen Hyatt with better draft capital. He can do more than just go deep. He broke out coming into Texas at the age of 18. You know, you look at these other guys, they broke out a little bit later in their collegiate careers. And, you know, they were put on the map really, you know, sure they were decent collegiate players, but they were speedsters. And obviously the story is still not completely written on a guy like Jalen Hyatt, but Xavier Worthy is not just a deep threat. He can win in other ways. And he's, I especially, you know, seeing him mocked a lot towards the end of the first round in the NFL draft, there's some juicy landing spots there, you know? So if Xavier Worthy were to go somewhere, you know, I know every year we want to say Buffalo or Kansas City, but it could be one of those spots. But even if it's not at this point, you know, you talk about upside, talk about the chance to be a difference maker on your dynasty roster with a later first round pick here. Give me Worthy.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a pro Xavier Worthy show. You don't need to worry about that. If you want to hear me wax lyrical about my love for Worthy, you can go and check out the wide receiver part 2 positional preview we did with Wyatt of JWB. Yeah, I'm a big fan. Age adjusted production, route running ability. What's not to love, quite frankly. So I am going to be up here with the 110. I'll be honest, you did snipe me a little bit there. So I'm feeling a little bit under pressure, but I'm going to go with Troy Franklin. I know a lot was made after the combine. I have to say, I've never seen anybody take so many hits for two bad drills in a gauntlet drill that everybody says doesn't matter. And then because Puka Nacua did it well last year, suddenly it's the most important thing. But I think this guy's fantastic. I think he's, to me, a taller Jordan Addison. I think he's a good route runner who gets open with ease. I think he walks into the NFL as a good deep threat that can win on posts, digs, crossing routes, that kind of thing, that has the route running ability to develop into a wider a route tree. And I really think that, you know, at this point, I think he's fantastic value. So, yeah, I'm very excited to add Troy Franklin to my team. You are now up with the 11th pick of the first round. Now, as we've talked about the depth in this class and the potential of the quarterbacks going early, pushing good guys, you know, back towards these later ends of the first round. Is this a point at which you're potentially looking to trade up into, maybe spending future capital or something like that to get some of these picks that are potentially good values?
Yes and no. I mean, every league is going to be a little bit different. I said I was only going to have one cop out answer, Rich, but here's the second one. You know, and it certainly, it does depend on, you know, ultimately what happens with JJ McCarthy. It depends on, you know, getting the assumed draft capital for a lot of these guys. But 111 or 112, I just think, I have no issue actually moving out for future draft capital and maybe get like a mid second back as well. I think I would be more likely to do that at this point in time than to trade in for a 111 or 112. You know, I think at this point in the offseason too, because of how veterans are devalued, you might be able to find a willing trade partner that's going to maybe let you stay in the second round, maybe a mid to later pick, and pick up a veteran that you know can produce. I think at this point in the draft at 111, we're getting to the point where maybe my 111 is somebody else's 204. You know, and I think there is going to be a lot of variance league to league, and that opens up opportunities. So it is a risk because you don't necessarily know how your league mates are going to be valuing the players and who might be going a little bit later or earlier. But long answer short, I'd be more willing to move out, I think, than move up into this range.
Yeah, and I tried to tee you up there, hoping that we'd find some disagreement, but obviously not. You've kind of agreed with me exactly. Yeah, this is a point where I'm trying to move back. I think once those kind of top eight go, that to me, I think there's a tier pretty much from the 109 to probably about the 206 of guys that for me, I think are very similar. Now, there's probably going to be some other guys that get thrown in there. So maybe I could move back as far as the 207, 208. But if I'm able to add a piece, whether, you know, it could be a future second, it could be, as you said, another player that can help me contend this year, plus get that second round pick, I think that's definitely a move that I'm looking to make. But you're now up with the 111. So who are you going to take? Because you can't trade out this pick in this draft.
Nobody wants to move in. Nobody wants to trade up here. I'll take Brian Thomas. I actually, you know, he seems to be a pretty divisive prospect here. You know, yes, he showed out at the combine, but he also has the production, and he was right there with Malik Nabers, you know, especially in 2023. So give me Brian Thomas. I see a comment in the chat, who's going to be the running back one? No one seems to be in agreement. And it's so tough when you have a big clump of running backs and you're waiting to see the draft capital and the landing spots. Because, yes, we say landing spot doesn't matter, but you need opportunity in running back. It is a little bit more dependent on landing spot when it comes down to it, especially if you have guys tiered together, than maybe wide receiver, because we can see multiple wide receivers out there each and every play. You know, look at like a Zach Charbonnet last year. If you told me going into the draft that Zach Charbonnet went the second round, oh my goodness, like that, fantastic. But he went to the Seahawks behind Kenneth Walker. Like, landing spot is going to matter, especially when you have a lot of these running backs clumped together. So I think ultimately, whenever the NFL draft takes place, we'll see a running back one go 110, 111. So I think it's going to be there, and it's going to push some of these receivers back a little bit. But at this point in time, I personally, I don't know about you, Rich, I just don't feel comfortable, you know, today making that pick. And I know it's just a mock, but
yeah,
If this were an actual rookie agreement, if this were an actual rookie draft, I would not be taking running back quite yet.
Yeah, no, 100%. I completely agree. I did the CBS Dynasty show with Heath Cummins a couple of weeks ago, and he's adamant that whoever is the running back one.
Oh, just Rich with a little humble brag there. you know, I just want to drop this in. No big deal. That's awesome.
And he's adamant that whoever the running back one is going to be in the top eight. I'm more aligned with you. I think probably 11 or 12. But, you know, if we see a running back go on day two to Dallas, as we've got another guy in the chat suggesting that Jonathan Brooks is going to Dallas, if we see a running back go to
the Chargers
or Baltimore or some one of these teams, you can guarantee that they're going to be flying up the draft boards. And yeah, I'm with you. I've got seven guys in a tier because to me, film analytically, there's nobody that's a complete player. I think they've all got slight knocks. They've all got slight weaknesses. The only guy I think can be a true three down workhorse back is Jonathan Brooks, and he's got an ACL injury. So yeah, I think they've all got a slight knock. So I'm kind of just going to rely slightly on what the NFL is going to tell us and where they're going to go.
But also it ties into like the running backs can only go so high, even with draft capital and landing spot, just because of the guys going ahead of them. Like, it's going to be tough to take a running back, especially over the top three quarterbacks, you know, with the three that we picked, going over the top three wide receivers and going over Brock Bowers. So really, I think 108, 109 is like the ceiling that you would see. But even then, like, I'm still probably going to take a JJ McCarthy over that running back. You know, so it's going to be very difficult for them to realistically gain too much value from a rookie draft perspective. Now, will you see a change, you know, when you compare them to veterans? Sure. Like if Jonathan Brooks goes to Dallas in the second round, his stock is going to rise significantly when you look at him compared to veteran running backs. So again, I think that just speaks to the high end talent here with this class across all the positions, maybe outside of running back, but it's going to really raise the value. And if you're looking to go veteran hunting, you're going to be able to get a great return for some of these picks if you choose to.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tom's talking in the chat saying contenders being willing to take on the risk on running back, he thinks. And I kind of agree. I think, you know, if you're willing to take that risk, if you're looking to push that for that title, that's the point at which you can push your chips in. I'm going to go and take the 112. I'm going to go and grab quarterback here. I think there's enough rumors and enough talk that I think Michael Penix could be going in the teens.
No, don't do it! If that happens,
him at the 112 is an absolute smash. So yeah, I'm going 112, Michael Penix. Are you a big Penix believer?
I'm not. That was a don't do it. Like, stay away.
What don't you? Okay, let's dive into this. What don't you like about Penix? I'm a big fan.
Now it's twofold. One, he's got to go to a spot that has a strong offensive line, in my opinion. All right.
Oh, he's a pure pocket passer. Does nothing out of the pocket. I agree. He needs that stability every time.
But two, and Dan and I got into a heated debate on this week's episode of Dynasty Theory. There was more than the red flag being thrown. I think I threw a shoe, you know, anyway. I could not take the risk of taking Penix or Nix in the first pre-NFL draft, just because I don't know I don't know how comfortable I feel with the fact that Michael Penix is actually going to go in the first round of the NFL draft. That's my issue. Now, if he goes in the first round of the NFL draft, and like this is post-NFL draft, we're doing the same thing, you won't hear a peep out of me. But I can't get on board today with the risk that he's going to be one of those guys that doesn't go in the first round.
Yeah, I can see that and I can understand that. I mean, I was happy taking Will Levis at the back end of the first round last year. I think for me, I guess I'm shooting for upside, and I think the upside of a quarterback is always going to outweigh basically any other position in a Superflex draft. So that's where I'm looking to potentially take the risk and dive in. We've got a few questions.
But more so for me, it's not necessarily anti-Penix, even though I probably would go Knicks if I had to pick. The joke I made yesterday was drop the PE, just go with Knicks. But it didn't get a strong reaction then. Not a strong reaction now. You know, it's like you tell the same joke multiple times. Somebody will laugh.
Eventually.
Think. Yeah. But it's more so just the question marks on where they go in the NFL draft. But again, we'll find out in just over a month. How that's going to play out.
Absolutely. So we got a few questions in the chat. I want to get to these and then we'll kind of fire through the second round a little bit quicker if you may, JV. But first question up from the Black Congo. How do we feel about Braylon Allen? Great size and athleticism, but didn't do much last year. Haven't heard much about him. Are you an Allen believer?
I'm not anti Braylon Allen. I think people are going to like him a little bit more than I will. He came into Wisconsin. He performed at a super young age. He's still only 20 years old, big body back. You know, he does a lot of things fairly well, but we did kind of see that. I don't want to say decline, but from an efficiency standpoint, I think it came down a little bit. Right now for me, I have Braylon Allen at running back 7-8. I have a tier of 7 and 8 together. There's just other directions I would go, but again, I don't hate Braylon Allen. Like you hear somebody say, oh, they're my running back 7 or they're my quarterback 4. It's like, oh my gosh, you're so anti this player. You know, it's just, I'm probably not going to like him nearly as much as my league mates. Like, you know, 211, 212, you want to take Braylon Allen as things stand today? Okay. Now, will that change depending on, how things shake out over the next month? Yes, there is room for some movement, but right now it's that 211 for me.
Yeah, so I've got him. He's my RB5. He's in the tier with the RB1. I think, as I said, the running back is a
we're big split. Mix at the moment. I think we're splitting hairs almost like 8 deep. You could say like there's 8. I feel I don't want to say great about. But 8 that I feel comfortable more than the others. And there's a group of 3, but those 8, like, you know, landing spot is going to change so much with this running back class because they're all clumped together. Like it didn't matter for people where Bijan went, where Barkley went, where Zeke went. I mean, even Gibbs, I know I was fairly high on Achan, like, but for these guys, there need to be some things to really differentiate them across that top 8. And while I do have them split among a few different tiers today, that's the one where I think we're going to see things get jumbled far more than quarterback, wide receiver, tight end.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the best way I can describe it, Bijan, Jamal Gibbs, Breece Hall, for me and my rookie model, they were all 95th plus percentile prospects. Every single one of these guys, if they're drafted on day 2, the best they can be is kind of a 77th percentile prospect. They're all in that 70 number. And I think that for me, they're all kind of potential, but there's nothing that I'm taking to the bank and feel confident about. And then the last question before we dive into the second round, JB. So one of our members, you can hit join and become a member if you want to be like Cam. So he's got the 101, Dak, T-Law at QB, seriously considering Neighbors, Marv, Wiz's pick. Is that nuts? What are your thoughts?
If I can't move back, I'm taking Caleb Williams. You know, and it's easy to say that, especially when I don't know the quarterback market in your specific league, but it's Caleb for me, just because, again, like we've talked about, I think you could move back a little bit, pick up some additional value and still get not Marv, but you probably could get Neighbors. And I, you know, clearly Cam has Neighbors ahead of Odunze, but that's a fine fallback too. You know, for me, it's Caleb Williams 101, even if I feel good about my quarterback room.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we got t-shirts made up. Draft for talent, trade for need. It's as simple as that. Don't overthink it. Take the clear cut 101. Don't overthink it and try and get smart. Right. Second round. Let's try and fire through this a little bit quicker, JB. So 201, where are you gonna go here?
Hold on, I gotta update my board over here. You took Penix at 112. At 201. Oh man, the kids are getting hollered at downstairs. I don't know if that picked up on the mic. I'll have to tell my wife, hey, you made the stream tonight. You're famous in the UK. I will go with, you know what? Black Congo 28 got me because my running back one right now is Trey Benson. Okay. I know, Rich, you said that Jonathan Brooks was the one guy that you saw as really a three down back. For me, I think Trey Benson is there too. I'm going to take him at 201.
No, it makes sense. I like the player. I think I've said this about every running back. He's in that tier. I think if he gets the good landing spot, if he gets decent capital, he could well be. Tom's in the chat. Shout out to the kids. They're working hard.
They're driving mom crazy right now.
Oh, it's a good job you're not in the room, you're on a stream and can't be there, can't be held to blame. I'm gonna go with, as I said, my running back one, the guy I feel most confident is the three down back. Look, if I'm taking him in the second round, I'm happy waiting 6 weeks. I'm happy redshirting him for an entire year, quite frankly. I think Jonathan Brooks is a fantastic back and could be a superstar at the next level. So yeah, I'm happy to grab him here 202.
Give me one of the standouts from the NFL combine. You know, you look analytically, not the strongest, like, you know, dinged up in the middle of games at times, but I'm going to take Ladd McConkey here at 203 on yesterday's mock draft. Mitch on the Dynasty Theory podcast took him at 112, and he's a huge Ladd guy. So maybe I'll finally be in his good graces landing him at 203 here.
That makes sense. I'm not a big Ladd believer. I talked about it on the wide receiver preview we did last week. I have some question marks. I'm going to stick with a tight end position here. I'm going to go Jatavion Sanders. Now, didn't have the combine that I'd hoped, but I still think he is phenomenal with the ball in his hands, a good enough route runner, and I think he's going to be a difference maker at the next level. So, yeah, given the tight end premium, I'm happy to grab him here at the 204.
205? And this is one because, like, I am a little bit more analytical and going through the spreadsheets, and he's kind of an interesting prospect because I think it is going to be the split between analytics and film, but I'm going to take a Donnie Mitchell at 205.
No, he's one of the players that I struggle most with because there's things I like on film, but I also feel like he's flashes rather than consistency. He oversells the route running piece, which drives me absolute mad. But yeah, I think there's some talent there. Look, you don't produce at Georgia and Texas and be a complete stiff. So I get it.
And I like you look at his yards per team pass attempt. His max wasn't exactly sexy, but overall he gets open. I think the NFL is going to like him a lot, and the top 40 draft capital, my expectation there, that's kind of baked in there too with taking him at the 205.
Yeah, and at the 206, I'm going to stick wide receiver. I'm going to go Keon Coleman. He's one of these guys I really like on film, but everything I wrote down was stuff that I didn't like. There's a lot of stuff he doesn't do well, but overall I was like, I quite like this player. I think there's more that he can do. I think he needs to round out his route running. I think he needs to improve as an overall player. But I think there's the raw tools there that could potentially work. And we got Black Congo happy because we take another Florida State player. You're back on 207.
I'm going to go Marshawn Lloyd.
Okay.
You know,
what is it that Lloyd has over the other running backs that you could potentially look at here?
So for me, it is that ability. And like I know Blake Corum, like that's kind of a little bit of a divisive prospect too. And I'm dilly-dallying here because I'm pulling up my spreadsheet on my phone just because, knock on wood, my internet's been okay. And I'm trying not to do anything to upset it by pulling it up on my laptop. But he's got the speed score. He popped it, you know, with his 40 time 4.46. He gives you enough from a receiving workload there, gives you the efficiency from a rushing perspective. Scrolling through here, efficient. You look at his rush yard market share compared to his rush attempt market share, and he really stands out there. And you know, rush yards per team rush attempt were just kind of, you know, they were fine. Nothing to write home about. He's got a nice size to him. And I think he's going to be one that the NFL, you know, I think he's a day two back.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm going to follow that up and go and take the guy that you mentioned. I'm taking Blake Corum. Look, he's nothing to get excited about. He's not the home run. He just feels like a nice, solid, safe double. And at this point in the second round, I think he's probably going to get day two draft capital. I think he's going to come in and he can be a solid 1B option, a potential flex play for me week in, week out. So I'm happy to go here. You are now
I have Corum and Lloyd tiered together.
Yeah.
Like I'm not going to sit there and be like, oh, you know, you gotta take Lloyd. And that's kind of where the, you know, deciding between players within a tier today, I think for running backs draft, the landing spot, you're going to see some movement there because of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You're back on with the 209.
I'm going to go Ricky Parasol. I'm going to go Ricky there at the 209.
Okay. And good route running, impressive athlete, fantastic hands. Anything else to add on that?
Well, let me maneuver here on my phone to get my spreadsheet. You know, a knock, he's not an early declare, you know, but he gives you the reception market share, the receiving yard market share, yards per route run, 2.47. That was his max, or not yards per route run, receiving yards per team pass attempt, creates separation, has the college dominator, broke out, not super young, or, you know, but age of 20, and the 4.41, decent, you know, middle of the road speed score. At this point, I think he's going to be a day two guy, and there's going to be potential there for him to rise once the NFL draft comes around.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, I'm going to go and take Braylon Allen. I feel like we talked about him before. I think interesting build, great size. I think, you know, Wisconsin backs seem to be transition very well to the NFL. I've got some question marks about his receiving ability. I don't think he's going to add anything in that game, but as a kind of a two down thumper that could be a thunder to somebody else's lightning, I think he could potentially work really well in the NFL. And you're back on the clock with the 211.
Yeah, I'm grimacing over here because I do think there is a chance that Bo Nix is going in the first round of the NFL draft. And you and I are both going to look silly with him not being taken up at least until the 211, because I'm not taking him here. But I just want to throw that out there. You know, he goes in the first round of the NFL draft. I'm taking him over Penix up towards that 112. But for me, because this is my last pick, the NFL combine ruined me on a Notre Dame running back before, and I don't want to let it happen here on the sanctuary. Give me Audric Estime. I like everything about his profile. Gives you enough receiving work, built like a monster. Yes, he was a little bit slower than we would have hoped, showed out a little bit better at his pro day, but I'm going to go Audric Estime. And like, I had Kyren Williams as the running back three, maybe pre-NFL draft, pre-NFL combine going into his rookie year. And it's kind of like an ongoing joke in our Discord because, well, he's still finishing the 40, but I'm not going to let that happen again with Audric Estime. So give me Estime here at 211.
No, it makes perfect sense. I am going to take the quarterback. I'm going to take Bo Nix. I'm not a big Bo Nix fan, but as you said, if there's a chance he goes in the first round, 212 feels like great value. Were there anybody that didn't get drafted or any particular sleepers that you're keeping an eye out for this year, JB?
At running back, I like Will Shipley. I like Jalen Wright. I like Bucky Irving. We didn't take any of these guys, and I think those are guys that could potentially be big risers. Again, that is the issue with doing a mock draft prior to the NFL draft. Like, it really does present a challenge because there's so many names that we could be looking back on this in a month being like, Rich, what the hell were we doing? How did we not take these guys? You mentioned Nix, obviously. You could put Leggett, Malachi Corley, Jalen Polk, Devontae Walker seems to be a guy that's been falling a little bit from an actual NFL mock perspective. Roman Wilson, Jacob Cowing, no other tight ends. I'm trying to see here. No other tight ends for me in 1.5 PPR through probably three and a half, maybe even full three rounds. But there's so many names that you could put up there. And then I mentioned that I had eight running backs and then a group of three. It's Frank Gore. It's Guerrero from
Louisville,
brain fart. And then Ray Davis, even though Ray Davis is about 54 years old, still somebody that is kind of intriguing to me. I think it's going to be a fun class. We're going to get a lot of wide receivers that check that day one, day two draft capital requirement, and a lot of different skill sets that are going to be available in rookie drafts here. And just running back, some of them are going to shoot up draft boards.
No, absolutely. I think it's going to be a fascinating next month to see how things lay down. And as you said, we're only a month away until we start to get that draft capital in the books. But thank you so much for your time, JB. Remind everybody that is listening, watching, where can they find you? Where can they find your work?
Yeah, at the Bauer Club on Twitter. I'm not exactly the most active person. I just kind of post our content. I'm in the Discord 24/7 over at Dynasty Theory. And we have the free Discord. We have a Patreon. I got the Dynasty tiers that I'm updating every single day. Cross-positional, rookie, comparing it to Dynasty Daddy and Fantasy Calc, and showing any market inefficiencies and opportunities to buy and sell. We do a weekly episode of the Pivot Point on the Dynasty Theory Patreon. So there's a lot going on, and it really is great conversations. And Rich, thanks for having me on. This was fun.
No, thank you very much for jumping on. It's been fantastic. If you are watching this and you want to go and find out more about the rookies, obviously we are dropping the rookie positional previews. We've done quarterback. We've done wide receiver part one and part two. We'll have running backs dropping next week. And then the all-important tight ends and sleeper shows to come. So go and check that out. Hit the subscribe button below. And obviously, if you want a copy of my rookie guide, hit the join button and you can get it from as little as $2.99 a month. We'll see you next week.